We are Sarva. The future of education starts here.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Everyday Genius. I'm Pete Craig, your host. And today it's a real honor to welcome to the show someone who is a creative director, a filmmaker, a photographer, an artist, if you like, but someone who, as a result of his art, has kind of like found a real tie to something that is making a difference, a real difference, yeah, in the world. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But first, let me introduce you to Santiago Rojas Duque.
Hello, hola, ¿cómo están? How are you, Pete? Thank you very much for having me here. It's a really honor for me.
It's an absolute pleasure. And just to give a little bit of background. So I don't even know how I came across you guys. I don't know. I was doing a little bit of like research and all of a sudden this, actually I know, it was the film.
It was the film.
From Del Mundo. So we'll talk about that in a second, but it was that kind of led me to then look at your website and then reach out to you and see if we could have a conversation. So, but before we get into that, you know, tell me a little bit more about kind of your background, because you know, you weren't a change maker from the beginning. You're a filmmaker.
Actually, I don't know. I have always in my life, the art was a little bit involved. Like my mom was a singer. So music for me was something that it was always with me and around me. And actually I start when I started doing creative work, I create a band. So I was more into music. Then after a couple of years of having the band, I started to get in more in the visual aspects of photography, visual arts, and I start to get into the films, because films are like, I think the new compound that you can have a lot of art mixed, and it's a really great and beautiful medium. But then I get into working in things that I don't like it, just to survive, and my dream to make films. And I think that's what happens with a lot of people that get into the art and or the filmmaking. And it's really hard to focus in your efforts in doing and the films that you want to make. So in some point I create a production company with a couple of friends, and we were doing it really great. We worked for a couple of years, we have our own studio, but I was not satisfied. So I quit and I started to travel around the world a little bit. And there I can find the time to realize that my purpose with the art that I was creating needs to be something deeper. The message needs to be something, the message that I want to bring to society is that harmony, peace, how to live in harmony with nature, or how we been forgetting or answering wisdom of our indigenous tribes. And I say, okay, let's focus on that. So if I don't do it, no, like it's not gonna happen, right? So I was in Guatemala, actually, in a jungle, in a ancient Maya site that is called El Mirador. It's like a city as big as LA. And I was making a short film there about this pyramid site. And then I start, like when we were trekking, a jaguar mom with his son, her son, she was walking with us all the trekking, but we never saw her, but we saw the
footprints.
The footprints, yeah. And then I started to have these dreams, and suddenly something started to connect with the jungle. And I was like, yeah, you already know what you need to do, but this is not the place to start. So there is a special place in Colombia that you are missing, and you need to come back to go there. And I immediately knew that there was the Sierra Nevada de Santa Marta in Lost City, that is like the Juna, is like, or Machu Picchu site, kind of like that. It's a round pyramid. And it actually is more older than Machu Picchu. So I went there and I started to, with the idea to make a little short film with a positive message to humanity. And I've been working on that for 4 years right now. And it's been a super great and awesome journey to just tweak a little bit of all of the things that we do in our work or in our lives that we don't want to, and focus our energy in the things that we want to.
Yeah. I should have said at the beginning as well that that you're originally from Colombia. So
yeah, I'm from Colombia. I'm born and raised there. But for 1 year, I've been living here in Europe, in Vienna. And right now, I'm based in Vienna.
Yeah. So going back, were you always, quite growing up, did you always have that connection to, and I know you said you had the connection to the art and to the music, but did you also have that connection to nature and to this sense of, there being this connection that we have and this need that we need to, we're one with nature? Was that always there for you, or was that something that came, as a result of this, your traveling?
No, I think I already have it. Like my grandfather, he was a farmer and he had a big farm. So I never knew him, but after I lived some period of my life with my father going to that farm pretty often. So he was working in the farm too. And then I don't know, I think in Latin America it's pretty easy to have that connection with nature in different ways here too. But for example, the stories that we have, that we hear it so often when we are child, and you grow up with that. So it's like in some way it's like, I don't know. And I think that having more close the indigenous tribes that they still are alive, so it's something that makes you realize, okay, that there is other way to life, that there are a lot of people that we don't know, that there is a lot of things of nature that we don't know. And I think it's more what we don't know than what we know.
Yes.
So it's a beautiful mystery. And in you start to walking into that mystery, and it never has an end. Yeah. Had an end, but I think it was something like a seed, and then you start to grow in it. And of course, when I was, I don't know, maybe I start to travel more and spend more time in nature, it creates a stronger relationship.
Yeah. And you knew, so you knew straight away that, Sierra Nevada was the place to go back to?
Yeah, because I was like going to pyramid sites. I traveled a lot of in Mexico, in Egypt, in a few places, and I was like super amazed with, I think that in the earth, there are things that our ancestors left them in a stone because they need to be preserved, and it's something that goes beyond time. So for example, the Stonehenge or the stone circles that there are around Glastonbury and all these places, that's in some way connectors and energy lines that is places of value. When you go there and you enter like in a dimension where it's like to increase your value and to increase the value of nature and humanity. So I was looking for that. So I was traveling in these sites. I don't know, sometimes you go outside from your country. And actually for me, it was because I was touring with a band and we went to Glastonbury to play. And from there, it was more easy to go to Egypt, and that's the reason. But I think the Tayrona National Park is in the ocean, and they have a small site that is called Pueblito, in Teiku. And that place is super important for the Tayrona. So that was the first place that I went, but I went only for one day. And I was like, okay, I need to go back again. Yeah. And for me, that place is super beautiful because it is a mountain that goes from the ocean to the snow. Yeah. And it's so big that I think nobody walk it entirely, and we don't know what is happening there. So, for example, those cities like the 200 archaeological site founded there, that is the most important. Wow. So there is a lot of places that we don't know that still are under the jungle.
Yeah. How were you, I guess, it's easier because you're kind of like native, but how were you received by the indigenous people?
I think it's a process. It's a process of trust. It's not even easy if I'm from Colombia, it's more easy because in some way we can speak Spanish and we look more related. For me, it's great because I have my native genes on me. So even when I go there, there are people that there are persons of the community that they think that I'm from the community, but maybe I go outside or something like that. Yeah. And that creates a bond really special. Mm. So, but in any case, it's different. Like, for example, something that I learned really young, that was that the silence is really important, and that we speak more without words than with words. Yeah. So that's something that for the indigenous is really sacred. So you don't create a relationship just like talking, hey, how are you, what is going on, but you just create a relationship and bonding just being there and just to experience, breathe with them, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful, but it's a process of trust, and a lot of them don't speak really good Spanish, so it creates a barrier too. But as I say, it's like a universal language that in a lot of cases, we don't need words. So I was pretty lucky because I was walking in a small town close to the beach. And then my first time that I went to Lost City is a trek for 4 or 5 days walking into the mountain, going high. And then I went down. And in that travel, I didn't meet the mamo, like the spiritual leader, elder, that is living there protecting that site. But I met other persons of the community, and we were traveling with an indigenous tourism agency. So it was a first contact, and it was great. They are really great. But then going down, I crossed I crossed my eyes with an Arhuaco indigenous that he was walking. And like, we laugh a little bit we smile a little bit with the eyes, but we didn't talk. And then I encountered him again in the beach. And it happens the same. But I was like super attracted to go and speak with him. But I was with friends and he was with other people. So then the same day, but more later, we cross again. Hmm. And that point was like, okay, we need to speak. Yeah. We need to talk. And I went and he was like, yeah, you look familiar or something like that. And he was like, yeah, how are you? What is your name? And he speaks really good Spanish, and his grandfather and his father was a really big leader in the indigenous communities. And he's super connected because he traveled a lot of the places of the Sierra with his father. And he's pretty well known for the community, in the community. So it was really great. And the next day he was like, I was with the camera. So he was like super into, I receive a workshop where they teach us how to use the cameras. And I think there was a National Geographic photographer that makes that. And he was like, I want to get a camera to start to doing photos. And I always wanted, but after the workshop, I quit a little bit and then I started doing other things. And I was like, yeah, no, let's do it. Like, and I give him my camera and we start taking photos. And then he said, like, if you have all your equipment, let's go tomorrow to meet the spiritual leaders, like the Mamos, and let's have a reunion of what are the projects that you want to do here.
Awesome. Wow.
And like that, the next day, 5 a.m. in the morning, we were walking into the mountain and we arrived on a spiritual place that is called Kundumake. And we have a reunion with four Mamos, and then we start to talk about like, okay, we want to make a video, we want to make send a message out of what is happening with our relationship with nature, and what that was the beginning of everything.
Yeah, I mean those sort of things are, for me, just a sign that you're kind of like following your purpose. Yeah, there's it was there. Yeah, and yeah, him showing up was no coincidence. It was it was meant to be. And I want to just rewind to something that you said, because this is something I'm a big like believer in. And you talked about silence, and you talked about, you know, the need for us sometimes just to be quiet, and then and the fact that we don't actually have to talk so much in order to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so important, and it's something that we've forgotten, especially, you know, like in the West. We feel that most people, and I kind of like teach this a little bit, but most people aren't listening. Most people are simply waiting for the next opportunity for them to speak.
Yeah.
So they're not truly listening, and they're not listening with intent. And actually, when you're with someone and you're sat face to face with someone who really listens, you feel it. Yeah, you feel it within you. Yeah, whereas if you're just having a conversation, there's no connection. Yeah, so I think, yeah, what you kind of picked up on, what you drew attention to there, is a really important message for, you know, for everyone. And the fact that this is something that is a strong belief and a strong value of the indigenous people, I think is just quite further confirmation that, yeah, this is a way that, yeah, we need to be. Yeah, we don't need to fill every moment with sound. We don't need to fill every moment with our voices, with conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's, I don't know, I've been so many cultures, it's been like, the silence, it's really precious. Like, for example, in the Himalaya or in the monks or every really deep connected tradition, silence is something that allows you to experience a more deeper, or even hear nature. Yeah. So for example, in the Sierra, what they say is that they can speak or they can hear with the trees or the water, and that we lose that connection because we always want to talk. And I found that here, as you say, is more, the silence is a little bit uncomfortable. Yeah. I don't know how to say that word really well. But the people feel like, okay, we should do just a small talk or whatever. Someone needs to say something. But there, when you are fully in the jungle or in nature, in the mountain, it's like, yeah, that's great. I can hear how the birds sing and how the water change or the different sounds. And I think it's something that we need to do it more often, even in the super mystical tradition things is like they said that our word is meant to be to chanting and to express life. But in the past, we could communicate each other with just our thoughts, but we lost that connection because our minds are not so pure. So everyone is afraid of someone that could hear their thoughts. But yeah, in the Sierra, there are mammals that they said that they can speak with other mammal in the other place, just sending thoughts. And it's something that they, in the Tibet, it happens too, that they say that that's possible. So I would love to believe in that magic, and that we humans are super special beings, that we are just waking up of our fully potential.
Absolutely. And I guess, you know, that's, yeah, all of that as well, like, is just the more time you spend, I'm guessing, the more time you're spending with the mammals, the more, and in those places, the more you develop that connection, and the more you realize the importance of it. And I think, you know, is that what triggered, you know, the whole journey of the film?
Can you reformulate the question with other words?
So really what I'm asking is, how did the film evolve? So, you know, it kind of, you've already said, you know, it started with this kind of first, you know, this first kind of reuniting with the mammals. But then after that, you know, how did you decide? Was that a collaborative thing that you spoke with them about what the message you wanted to put out there was, and you collaboratively worked on the idea for it, or is it something that's evolved over time?
Yeah, I think it was super spontaneous. Like in the first reunion that we have with the mammals of that community, they told me like, okay, it's great that you want to do, and we feel your force and we feel your intentions, and it's really great, but film is a material thing. And right now we need to go deeper. So your desire to take care of nature needs to go deeper. So that year, actually, there was a really long summer for 10 months, something like that. There was no rain. And the problem in the Sierra was that 20 years ago, it was almost 30 years ago, it was mostly fully deforested. Like 80% of the native forests were cut down. Yeah. After 20 years, the native communities, they start to getting back the lands, and they do natural restoration, and everything grows again, beautiful. But we need to support that process too. So one of the problems that they have is that they are building new settlements, and in some of that settlements that they lose a little bit the food forest traditions that they have. So they are bringing food from the lower parts to the upper parts, and then we realize, okay, we need trees. Like, it's something that we really need. Like, yeah, there are trees, but one of the problems is that the people go there and there is a lot of green, and it's like, yeah, there are forests, but not like before, and not the forest that we need to have.
Yeah.
Green is not an equal thing as a fully biodiverse forest. So I was getting into the permaculture too, and I started planting trees, and I was like, okay, I don't know how to make the film. I don't know how to record the message, but let's give birth to this and just spontaneous. So we have the second journey to Lost City, and then we arrived there, and there was the spiritual leader there, the Mamo. That Mamo Romualdo is the one that gives the message. So for me, it was not just a film. It was more like a video message. It's a video message. It's with some visual poetry, but it's not a story or something like that. It's a message. So I was like, yeah, we meet, and it was like, okay, we want to deliver a message that you want to say. And he was really, it was a beautiful moment because he was really confident and beautiful. And he was like, yeah, of course, let's do that. You are ready? Yeah, we are ready. We put the camera, we put the sound guy. And he started, okay, I'm going to give you the message. And he started to speak like 8 minutes straight in native language, Kagaba. And then he started, and then in the end, he was like, yeah, it's done. And we put off record, and we speak a little bit. And he was like, yeah, you need to find, go there, and someone is going to help you to translate that. And
beautiful.
Let's see you the next time that you come.
Amazing.
Yeah, and it was like that. Actually, it was like that. And then, because you go there into that place and it's a 4 or 5 day trekking journey, and it's really tough. It's physical demand and mental demand. And it, when you reach the site, you have only a few hours to be there. And he's not always there. So lucky for us, he was there. And there was nobody else because we go super early into the morning. And then he was like, yeah, but I need to do other things. So thank you for coming. Yeah, that's everything. That we record that in 2016. And I spent like the whole 3 years like looking what we should do with this. Like we should build a full documentary, but we didn't have funding. We were financing everything ourselves. So it was really hard. And the most difficult part is that we didn't know what he was saying. Like he told us, but in a super short way. So not the full meaning. And then we was trying to find someone to translate that, but the person that he told us, he was not there. So we need to come back again. And the logistic was like super difficult.
Yeah.
And yeah, finally, after some years, we find an indigenous Wiwak filmmaking collective, and they help us to translate everything. And that's the point that we was like, okay, let's put this together and then put it online for free to the people.
It is a super powerful message, and we'll put a link under the podcast so yeah, you can
That will be great.
Watch it. It's well worth watching, and yeah, the message is so powerful, and I think it really speaks to what it is that you're trying to do. Did you just want to like explain for anyone who's listening that doesn't know what a food forest is?
What a food forest is like, it's the traditional way that we grow food over thousands of years. It's like, when you go to a forest, the first thing that you need to notice is that there are not so many equal trees. Like there is biodiversity. So there is a lot of species. Here in Europe, I don't know, it's really a little bit different because in some ways the forest here, they have a lot of trees, but they have a lot of equal trees, like monocultures. The grade that we grow food before, it was in polycultures, super biodiverse agriculture. So a lot of species grow together. That makes that the difference that we have make us stronger. And the soil that we are sharing, it makes us grow more more strong and without pests or without diseases, because the one thing that attack one plant, the other plant repel it.
Yeah.
And it's the indigenous traditional way to grow food. So they grow cacao, they grow cafe, they grow pineapple, they grow potatoes, they grow papaya, orange, and avocado in the same place.
Yeah.
We lose that, and in some point of the agricultural revolution, we start to growing just one crop. Yeah. So we take down all the forest and then let's grow potato. And of course, only potato is not so good for the environment. So you need to put a lot of pesticides or whatever to keep outside the pests. And that's not a natural, that's not how nature works. You don't see that in nature anywhere, like one forest or one species. So that's a food forest. And for the indigenous cultures, it's been like the way that they grow their food, and it creates resilience. It creates food for birds, for wildlife, and that's food forest.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for that. The Sierra Nevada is kind of called the heart of the world.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
Well, for me, it's like it has a lot of meanings, but I think just for me, it's like a place of value where you go to reconnect your heart, to go deep into your heart. So I feel really happy and stronger and with my thought clear when I'm there, walking there. I feel more interconnected with everything. So for me, it's like going into the heart of nature. But I think that there is a lot of hearts of the world in the world too, you know, like it's like, but something that it happens there that is special. And it's like everything that happens there has a repercussion in the entire air.
Yeah.
And it's something that the communities that when the conquests arrive, they go up into the mountain and they are preserving ancient knowledge that is invaluable for humanity. And we don't know how much they know, but they know a lot. So it's like a really special place that we need to put our eyes on preserve that place.
Yeah.
And it's proven that there is a microsystem there in the Caribbean that actually biologically proved that everything that happens there affects the rest of the world.
Wow.
So tell
where did you the kind of big mission come from then, kind of like, you know, the Jaguar Siembra, where did that kind of begin? Because I'm guessing that's all been, is you bringing everything together, so your experiences, the film, and putting it under one umbrella that allows you then to support all of these different projects and protect, you know, that area.
I always see like the project like a tree with a lot of leaves. Not leaves.
Branches.
Branch and leaves. Yeah. But the beginning was like, let's make that film. Then we start to planting trees. Then we start to supporting the food forest that they were creating, and it's evolving through the years. So I want to just focus our efforts in natural and cultural preservation, conservation, and start to going deep in both worlds, because we need both things, and we need to preserve the culture, and we need to preserve nature, and humanities in between, creating the bridge or something like that. So I think we want to focus in not only working the Sierra Nevada, but expand it and work with different tribes in different parts, and hopefully one day with different parts of the world. And the idea of the food forest is that we start to create that type of food forest in every part of the world that we can, even here, because here we have the same problem. Like, we are taking down all the forest to grow food. So I think it's the main cause of the deforestation that we face in the world, but it's not so noticed. It's the way that we grow our food. And there is a lot of things that we would love to like to go into, for example, the Celtics or the Druids that are here. There are people that keep preserving that, or in Africa, in Asia, I don't know. We would love to create a more worldwide project, but the heart is in the Sierra. Yeah. So it's the beginning, and we want to focus our efforts the coming years in building that relationship and making it stronger to start to to do it more things.
So a lot of your time now is quite focused on quite projects that support that. So it's quite raising money to support like planting programs and reforestation.
Yeah. I think the program that we want to create is a community supported regenerative agriculture. So we need to change the way that we consume the food and the way that we produce it. Yeah. So for example, with that program, or with that, I don't know the exact word, but it's like with that approach, the idea is that a community supports the farmer before they start to sowing or they start to doing the projects. Wow. So in the end, we will receive like the harvest, but as a community, we will support the whole process. Yeah. So that allows us for the farmer to create resilience and security, more income, and at the same time regenerate the lands that they are working. Because we have a problem with the soils too. The soils are getting damaged super fast, and it's something that we are not thinking, but without soils, we cannot grow anything. Yeah. And the idea is that, for example, right now we are working with the coffee. So the idea with the coffee is that we pre-sale the coffee. So the community will sponsorship the coffee, and then when the coffee is here, they are gonna receive the coffee.
Yeah.
And I think that model could work in a lot of projects. Even here, there are farms that they are doing it. So for example, we want to receive our food from a small farm here around Vienna. And then we pay in advance for the food, and they deliver when they have the harvest to our home. Yeah. And that will be something great to create like a circular economy.
Beautiful. It's interesting. I did an interview a couple of weeks ago with a guy in LA called Jemiah Hargins, and Jemiah has set up a program. It started off just in his back garden, him growing collect fruits and vegetables just for his family, and then he ended up with too many. So then he started sharing it with his neighbors. And now there's about 100 families in the community that all quite grow in their back gardens. And then once a week, they come together and they swap any. So if you've got too many potatoes and you want some tomatoes, and that person's got loads of tomatoes, then you swap them. Yeah. And they've got this whole movement going on in LA now. And they're delivering fruit boxes to people and vegetable boxes. Yeah, and it's really a very similar thing, but in a much more urban way.
Yeah.
So encouraging people to actually get in their gardens, to grow, and then to share. And to do things in the way that you're talking, where it's we're not forcing overproduction in order to supply. We're just all collaboratively doing it, and then we're sharing.
Yeah, I think that's the future. And even it's more beautiful that it's happening in the cities.
Yeah.
Because we have the spaces, but so often they're like parking lot or whatever, or the rooftops of, we can do that. And I think that we don't have a problem with food, but we have a problem with the distribution of food. because we produce even more food that all humanity needs, but that food is not well distributed, and that's the problem. Yeah. And it's a business, so I think that since we explode everything from the forest to becoming into a profit or a business, that's a great point for humanity to change everything. Because before it was like you say, if I have more tomatoes, I'm going to give you tomatoes, and then you're going to give me potatoes because I don't have so many potatoes. And of course, it's something super idealistic that we cool back fully to that, but we can do a lot to recover so many of that things that it worked great in the past and it could work right now.
Yeah.
And I think a slow down a little bit the food business would be great, because a restaurant is wasting a lot of food that some other people doesn't have and they need it. So right now there are even programs that they recover the food that is going to be wasted and deliver to the people that need it. But I think that is something that we can grow a lot of food in super small places. Yeah. So it's abundant. It's really abundant. And if the governments or whatever they really want it, they will create that community farms and they could deliver food for free.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So what's next? Have you got another, is there another, like, yeah, another film? Is there another Corazón del Mundo in the pipeline?
Yeah, we are working to create a participative video with the communities. But we want to change, like, I was like filming, directing, producing, doing mostly everything by myself. And in that process, we encountered that there is a problem that we always go to these communities and take something that they want to say and put it in the way that we want to show it to the world.
Yeah.
We have the best intentions, but in that we lose a lot of things that probably how they want to be seen,
yes,
what exactly they really want to tell. And right now they are pretty advanced, so they have collectives that they are making really beautiful movies. And the idea is to start to working as brothers and start to collaborate each other and make something that destroy this patriarchy way of doing films, that the director is here and the producer is here, and then it's like a pyramid shape, but making more like a circle.
Yeah.
So working with the communities and say like, okay, what the stories do you want to tell? What is the message right now that you want to put it out? How did you imagine to put that? So the next step is that we are working actually with England project, a project from England that is Inside Share, and we have this idea to make a participative video, videos, because we want to build a long relationship where we can start to put in more short pieces together with the communities.
Awesome.
But that is going to happen when all this craziness go, the waves goes a little bit down, and then we can start. Our idea was to start with the first workshop in January, and then from then continue. But I think that the films are something super beautiful and something super special, but right now with the situation that we are living is something that is a lot of money that needs to go there. So we have more priorities like the food forest or other projects that we want to work in that first.
Beautiful, beautiful. And just before we end, is there a final like message that you'd love to share with everyone that's listening? Yeah, whether it's a personal message or a message that relates to the message that the Mamos shared.
I think that it's time for us to be united, and there is so much value that we have ourselves that we don't recognize, and it's a beautiful time to work on that, because we are the responsible to create our connection with the forces of nature. So it's not something that if I go to that place, I can have that connection of if some spiritual guide is guiding me, I'm going to have that connection. No, I think it's something that you do personal.
Yeah.
It's a personal work that we need to do. And we need to put more the desires and the dreams that we have into action, because we speak too much and we don't do too much. So I encourage to the people that we can create, and we can have a bigger impact if all the people will be more aligned into not supporting, but creating this type of projects too. Like I'm a normal person from Colombia. My background is I never deep poverty or deep richness. It's like something like that. But I was always in the middle, living in the two worlds. And I don't have the means to support all this project that we are doing, but we are doing it. So, and we are encountering people that support us and give us hope to continue. So, for example, here in Europe, there are a lot of people that has the means and even have more responsibility to start to create and co-create this type of projects. So the call would be like, let's act together and act now. Like we are experiencing a pandemic, we are experiencing a climate crisis. And if we don't do nothing and if we go back to normality again really fast, like it's happening, we are not going to change nothing. And we have a lot of work to do and we need to do it happily, with joy, with hope. I think is the way. So yeah. And for all the people that go and watch the film and support our project, and yeah, let's co-create together. Together we are the forest.
Perfect. Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Gracias, mi amigo.
Thank you. Gracias a ti.
We are Sarva. The future of education starts here.